The content presented in this podcast is intended solely for inspirational purposes and is not health advice. The information shared is not to be construed as psychological advice or treatment provided by health professionals. It's crucial you consult with qualified healthcare providers for any specific psychological concerns or medical conditions, and you're encouraged to exercise your own judgment and discretion when interpreting and implementing any ideas or suggestions presented in this podcast. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the Sisterhood Downloads. I am your host, Jacqueline Byrne.
And I'm Juliette Thompson, and we are so excited to have you join us as we explore how women can truly thrive with reflection, connection, and community.
I am a clinical psychotherapist.
And I'm a psychologist and coach, and we are both mothers of young children, as well as being entrepreneurs.
We are thrilled you've joined us here at the Sisterhood Downloads.
Hello and welcome back to the Sisterhood Downloads. So we have a particularly juicy topic for you today, dear listeners. We really want to start talking about and explore with curiosity the topic of Ozempic and Mounjaro and these new cutting edge weight loss treatments that have come from diabetes treatments, because I'm hearing about it a lot in the news at the moment, some issues and some things that have piqued my interest, as well as obviously working in the eating disorders field. There's some intersection there. So we are going to unpack this a little bit, always with hopefully curiosity, because there's a lot that we don't know about this. But Jacqueline, are you like me? Have you been hearing this in like every news article and across everyone's lips in the last couple of months?
It's really just blown up in our worlds. I think particularly through the eating disorder space, I'm hearing a lot about it through clients that have struggled with overeating, binge eating, long-term struggles, psychological pain with weight, but also hearing it come through the non-clinical space through the community. People are really curious, and part of the intersection between eating disorders and general community that we touched on in our episode around disordered eating is that even if it's not clinical, it's very, very common for people to have disordered eating, which might include so-called emotional eating, overeating. And we've known for a long time as a society that weight loss is a highly marketable prospect and something that many people are hooked in by and fascinated with. So I suppose it's not surprising that when a miracle drug as such is released or available, that many people are interested in talking about this.
Yeah. You know, I think this topic is fascinating because it has quite a few different levels and angles that you can look at it from. And I think one of those angles that might be unexpected is this idea that I have a hunch that there are some people who have experiences in their body that don't fit the framework that we often talk about, which is intuitive eating, is regular eating. And I'm not 100% sure on this because I haven't read research about it. But if we just think logically, where our bodies are primed for survival, and one way that it needs to survive is eat food, and that makes food a priority. But when we think about the context that we adapted to as early humans, that's clearly very different from the very food-centric environment that we have now. So food was scarce, therefore our brain adapted to focus on it to get it. But now our brain hasn't really probably adapted very differently, but food is everywhere. And I do think, and I have direct experience, that many, many, many people, most, if not most, can develop a harmonious, balanced, positive relationship with food despite being in a food-centric environment. But I have a suspicion that there is a proportion of people that their bodies are hyper-focused on food for whatever reason. And that's where I think that, Some people have expected me to be very negative about Ozempic necessarily because of eating disorders, but I don't know. I don't see it in that black and white way necessarily. But obviously there's a lot of caveats with this. But yeah, what do you think of that perspective, Jacqueline?
I'm very excited to talk about this. There's so many pathways to cover. But similarly, what I've seen in practice as well is that there's almost a level of ableism when it comes to the assumption of a framework like intuitive eating, which I am a huge proponent of, and I wax lyrical about intuitive eating in many of my working hours. But like anything, it won't work for everyone. And there are different things that can get in the way. Sometimes what gets in the way is an eating disorder that isn't responding to treatment. And I don't think in those cases that medication like Ozempic is appropriate. But sometimes, at least hypothetically, we could suppose that the same mechanisms which are allowing many people to use intuitive eating and not going to be available in everybody's physiology. There's still so much we are yet to understand about the neurology of food and hunger and satiety. And so if there are components that are not working as effectively, do we continue to unintentionally shame people or put them on a carousel of just keep hacking away at trying intuitive eating for another decade and
Yes,
it affects
yes.
their life so much in the interim, or offer them something different. And another way that that interruption could show up that I do see a lot is when clients might have made a lot of progress through their eating disorder. However, they have comorbid depression or anxiety or ADHD, which they may want to be medicated for, and that medication interrupts their appetite, or the experience of anxiety depression interrupts their appetite. So again, it's not, and I just want to quickly say the reason we wouldn't recommend Ozempic or similar products for someone actively in an eating disorder is because they're not in a place to safely judge what is appropriate eating, and there would be a pull through that disorder to opportunize restriction. If they're not coming from that place because the eating disorder part has been quite is recovering quite well, but they still can't access those functions because of, let's say, quite significant anxiety, they are then also stuck in a place of not being able to intuitively eat. And is it acceptable to therefore just say you just have to wait there or keep working on the anxiety for an unknown amount of
Yeah.
time?
Just as an aside, we don't make any medical, give any medical advice on this podcast, and we're not suggesting that anyone do anything. We're just having a informational chat between the both of us about this. There you go, you happy lawyers. But yeah, I think you speak to some really important things, and essentially the summary of that is there may be some medical cases where something like Ozempic or similar could be really profoundly helpful for supporting people to eat in a positive way. Unfortunately, though, it's a whole lot more complex than that. And some of the things that I'm seeing in this space do put a lot of red flags up for me. And not that I therefore am judging people for using it or think how could you, not at all. It's more of a curious space of, oh, that's really interesting. How can we support people in the best way? And one of those is, I mean, exactly what's happening in the media at the moment. Four Corners did a little piece on the shortages that is happening at the moment, right? Mass shortages. And so that's causing a lot of distress at the moment for people in a lot of different ways. And that's deeply concerning. And it's made me wonder, like, I'm not trying to be conspiratorial here, but really? Like, why can't you just make more? What's going on? Like, if you make more, you sell more. Like, I don't know. There's something suspicious about that. Do you think I'm being a bit too conspiratorial there?
Not at all. It's very interesting. Just tell us the ingredients. We can make. How hard can it be?
That's a huge problem. People are making it. Like this Four Corners was saying that you can actually make it as a like an off-label. You know, when you go and get medication from the chemist, they say, "Would you like the brand or the off? You know, the not brand, the generic." They are making it generically, but there are seeming to be some significant problems because there are some dodgy stuff happening with some of the generic production. So it's a horrible place to navigate right now. If you are on Ozempic and need Ozempic, then that's just awful. And I wonder about the market dynamics, the psychology of marketing. You know, make something really scarce, people want it and want to pay for it. So that's going on at the moment. The other thing that some of the things, yeah, that feel a bit uncertain for me is this idea that it seems that when you go off Ozempic, you regain the weight. And that then indicates you need to be on these substances for the rest of your life. And I get the feeling that people aren't prepared for that. Is that something you've picked up as well?
Absolutely. I don't think that's been well communicated because I actually haven't heard anybody reflect that as they've come into beginning to take Ozempic, that it's seen as a miracle drug again, that something that's finally going to help them adjust their weight and then life will be good from that point. Or I do know people that have been guided medically to take Ozempic for 3 months or 4 months, and then the implication is that they would come off it without further conversation as to what exactly happens to their body from that point. But the patient just walked away with the understanding that their weight would be stable at the lower weight, for which there is no reason that it would be if it's being artificially managed in that time. And what does that mean? Therefore, what's the point of being on it if there is inevitable weight gain without being on the medication for the rest of your life? Or then if you are going to be on it for the rest of your life, what are the implications of that with something that is under-researched and has not we don't know, no one has been on this medication for a number of years. We don't know what that looks like.
That's right. That's a deep, deep concern of mine. And I think that everyone's so excited about it. It's like it's too hard to think of the long term. So I'll just focus on the short term. But are we, and I don't know, maybe these drugs are safe long term, absolutely possible. But are we going to see a wave of chronic health conditions? I mean, you'd take out one of the pamphlets of these drugs and the pamphlet. You could cover your living room floor with the size of it. The warnings on it about damage to organs, etc., are really high. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen to people necessarily, but yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Are we going to see a wave of conditions in 10 years? And then people get stuck. Like, okay, well, my doctor's saying I have to come on this because my pancreas is giving up, but then I'm going to regain 40 kilos. That's awful for people to be in that position. That's a big concern of mine.
And I couldn't be clearer that there is no judgment coming through us at all, because both you and I have supported people that have gone through so much pain because of being unable to find a satisfactory result within themselves for their weight and maybe their eating. And I feel in regards to most things that if whatever someone needs to do to make life doable, you go ahead and do it. And if that's what you need to do to make being here worthwhile or to find a way through a difficult circumstance. But the problem is more so that it's puppeted as it's such an ultimate solution, and it's not like other medications or say a very intrusive major surgery. There might be a more serious conversation around both outcomes have really serious potential consequences, weighing everything up,
Yeah,
the
that's right.
recommendations to go with B over A or vice versa. But to really, really put on the table what those risks and consequences might be.
For sure.
Whereas the the temptation, the marketing opportunity with a drug like Ozempic is to just really whitewash that and the intersection with the wellness industry of how easy it is to, even with the pamphlet that you mentioned, the colors that are used and the models that are used and the way that it's offered is suggesting there aren't the complications or the costs that there might be. And how likely is it that such a significant area of health in our Western world could just be solved with a medication that doesn't have a different end story?
Absolutely. And to be really clear again and extend what you've just said, I'm not opposed to someone taking a medication to deal with weight at all. I don't believe there's a moral imperative not to at all. Nothing like that. Great. Awesome. If the following factors are satisfied, and one of those is health long term, what's this doing? The other one that concerns me is financial. It is really expensive to be on this drug. And if you are on this drug for the rest of your life, it concerns me that people might not have thought about that financial impact. So, that's an area of concern. And then obviously a biggie as well is something that we're quite sensitive to, is that there are a lot of people out there with disordered eating. And you put a drug on top of that, it can be deeply, deeply problematic. And unfortunately, if this drug continues to shoot off in the way that it is, I think that we will unfortunately see more cases of anorexia, and they'll be interesting, or Ozempic induced, or whatever drug label it is, induced anorexia. I think this is going to be a growing field for eating disorder clinicians, unfortunately. So I guess my stance, if I'm going to summarize it, is, if I could see a drug like this being fantastic if the following conditions are met. Number one, that a person actually has a good relationship to food at the base, at the core of it, that they don't have comorbid mental health conditions that are exacerbating misuse of food. So what I mean by that is, let's say, food is performing a function for them, right? A stress reliever, a significant stress reliever, or a number. If you take that out, what are they going to go to next? They'll just need to find something else, right? So number one, does someone actually have a good relationship with food at the basic structure? Do they feel, I mean, we could go into that for ages, so I'll leave it there. Number two, is this drug needs to be free or very minor, like metformin. Metformin costs $10 every 3 months. Nothing, right? Well, that is something to some people, but it's fine. And then the third is, do we know that this isn't going to cause massive issues down the line for health? And if all those three things can be satisfied, yippee, exciting for a lot of people.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. And I hope that our listenership just hears in this, our curiosity and our caution, and certainly use your own critical thinking and take into account your own circumstances for evaluating whether something is helpful for you, as that goes with everything that we share and say. But it is such an interesting space, and I'm very genuinely curious to see what unfolds. And I wish we had a crystal ball on this one.
I am too, and I hope that this has triggered off for listeners just some more thoughts and questions about this topic. And as a society, I think we also need to be talking in a more nuanced, complex way about these topics. I heard another podcast, an American podcast, and it was really annoying. They were like, "Oh, we've got an obesity problem, and this is revolutionary." And it just really was grated me for many reasons. There's so many problems with that perspective. But we're also, what we're talking to is empowerment and personal choice. So I empower people to accept their body size if that works for them and they feel good in that. And like, that's fantastic. But also, I will not sideline people who say, I am uncomfortable in this body. Like physically, I'm at a higher risk for illness, or I can't live my life in a way that I want to live. I mean, we can't sideline that either. So I think it's about supporting people to make informed, compassionate decisions for themselves.
Beautifully said. Hear, hear.
All right, listeners, we are so excited to keep bringing you these podcasts. If you like our podcast, please don't hesitate to write a review or share it with somebody that you think might like it, because it really helps our algorithm and we do want to share our message to as many people as possible. So take care, listeners, and until next time.